Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Hey, January is upon us. By the time this show airs, we'll have a new president. The inauguration will have taken place. And for us, all of us, we just got to remember what we have to do to work together our hopes and dreams and contribute to make this new presidency a complete success. We can't be out there and be bitter and do anything else. Well, let's talk about veterans. Everybody's got a story, and every story you hear about the veterans are totally incredible. Ray's had a story. I've had a story. All of us. Well, today we've got an incredible journalist, a reporter from the Champaign News-Gazette in Champaign, Illinois. He's been writing a column now for several years on those who served. The stories of our military, the story of the men and women who served our nation through multiple wars. Paul, welcome to Warrior Connection, sir.
Hi. Thanks for having me up.
Well, I mean, you've been a reporter, News-Gazette. You've done lots of different things over the years. You and I have known each other for quite a while.
Yeah.
How did this idea to come up with do a full column, a series of columns on our military personnel, the men and women who served? You called it Those Who Served.
Yes. 3 years ago at D-Day, I did one of these, and there was a lot of reader interest. So I asked my bosses if I could do it every week, and there's never run out of people. There's always plenty of good stories about people who have served our country.
It's pretty exciting. I mean, when you look at the stories you've written, you've covered everything. I mean, from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the current kids, all those in between. What do you find unique about all this?
I've tried to get as many of the World War II people in at first because they're a very valuable resource that is getting thinner all the time. But yes, we've covered every war, and some peacetime people have had interesting stories too.
The News-Gazette published a book, I don't know if you were involved in it, and I know some other ones were involved in it, on those that went to war with World War II.
Yes.
Did you have an opportunity to work with them or speak some of them afterwards or continue on with that series?
Well, yeah, a few of the people who have appeared in Those Who Served were in that book. I did work on it, but I wasn't a major player. But many of the people, when I thought I would use that as a resource to find World War II veterans, but so many of them have passed on.
Tell us some stories about the World War II veterans. When you encounter a veteran, are they ready, willing, and able to talk about what they saw? I mean, that's 70 years ago now.
I think they're more willing to talk about it now than they were when they were younger. My own father was in World War II, and he died young, and he never liked to talk about it. But I've talked to people in their 90s who were extremely open, and including one who was telling me about some crimes he committed, actually, when he was stuck in Berlin and out of money. So, yeah, the one common thread in the World War II people over and over again was, I thought was interesting, and was that they all believed that it was correct to drop those two atom bombs, that they had no doubt about it, that it stopped the war. And so I just kept my mouth shut because I'm not sure I believe that.
Well, the clarity has got to be unique because I know my father was in World War II, and Ray, I think your father was in World War II also, correct?
Yes, correct. Yes. I think the Paul, do you have over all these different veterans, do they have a certain pattern of patriotism about them or anything like this?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, they're all very patriotic. Even the ones who were drafted, once they were committed to the war or whatever their service was, there's a very unifying thread. They really would do anything for their country.
Did any of them ever tell you about regretting going or anything like this?
Some have expressed regrets. A few people who felt like they may have killed some people, friendly fire, or killed some civilians that they didn't know about, because I'm thinking mostly of the people who were in airplanes, the bombing raids in World War II. Yeah, they can't really know what they did, and they felt like they did it from a distance, and that's kind of cold, they thought. But overall, I think most of the people were very happy that they served the country.
Yeah. The World War II veteran, what were the, I mean, today they're all in their 80s and 90s, mainly in their 90s.
Right.
But what was the age group of World War II veterans? I mean, when they went in, that war started. I know my father was in his late 20s when he got enlisted, uh-huh. almost 30. What was the age group or age differences between, say, the World War II and Korea, Vietnam, and the current veterans?
My father lied about his age and got in when he was 17, and there were a lot of people his own age. I don't know if I could make a generalization about the Korean veterans, but a lot of the Vietnam veterans were very young, although a few of them had gotten college deferments and were in their mid-20s when they entered the war.
Did you serve in the military yourself, sir, or were in Scott College and lucked out, or...?
I always kind of regret that I didn't. And when I'm talking to people, I feel, a little bit in awe of what they've done. But when I was in college, when I started college, the Vietnam War was very much winding down. I started college in 1973. And they weren't.
Well, Paul, I think all of us could tell you that you didn't miss much, let me tell you. But in World War II, there was a saying that I use it quite often for those who didn't go, or those that stayed home and helped out in other ways, but the saying was, they also serve who stand and wait.
Sure.
And if you participate in any way, we appreciate that.
Thank you very much. That's very nice of you.
I think the unique thing, the World War II, obviously the clarity was there. There's no doubt at all. I think I was probably 10 years old the first time I saw pictures where Harold Tritt showed us pictures he took of Auschwitz. And so it was astonishing. The clarity for World War II was there. I mean, talking to my cousins who were in Korea, and both, I mean, Paul, you and I both have a very good friend, Jim Turpin, was in Korea
right.
at the end there.
Yeah.
And the clarity was even there for World War II, but the clarity since then of why we've gone to war and what we've been involved in has disappeared. How does the veteran respond to that, or how do they talk about that?
I heard from both Korean and Vietnam veterans, a lot of bitterness about their return, and they didn't get the ticker tape parades. There were so many television shows like Combat about World War II, and everybody just really felt like that was the good war, that we freed people from Auschwitz, and then in the Pacific theater, the Japanese had done a sneak attack. So that is why, going back to the people who were sure that dropping the atom bombs were correct, they really felt like that was a correct war. But particularly with Vietnam, people were telling me about being spit on and mistreated, and that they did, one guy mentioned when he came back, he was just nervous all the time and from his action, but he was that was exacerbated by the attitude of the people around him.
Ray, when you found out,
Paul, I studied Japanese for over 20 years. And I've studied the samurai through martial arts and such. And I think one of the arguments with World War II was, if you know anything about the Japanese people, they're very they're hard, and they can be hard through the samurai culture. And one of their main philosophies was, you never give up. And I think that was the idea, that if you went into mainland Japan, we were expecting a million casualties ourselves. And I think the bombs probably thwarted that.
I've heard the same thing, that even civilians would have fought back with pitchforks or whatever they had at
true.
Hand.
Yeah, it's true.
I've also heard the political argument that that Russia was about to make a big move towards Japan, and we wanted to make sure that we made the Soviets back off too. But veterans are all in agreement that there would have been a very bloody war. That wouldn't have been good for Japan either. They would have been massive losses of Japanese life.
That's true. That's true.
The World War II veterans.
I agree. I was a ground troop, and I can imagine going into a nation like that everybody is your enemy and they're fighting every way you can. So I can only really speak from that point of view, but I understand the political too, and they didn't want to destroy an entire nation. And it worked okay the way it did. I'm sorry for the people who died, but it had to be stopped in some form or some fashion, and that seemed to be the most, the quickest way.
I agree.
When the World War II veteran came back, obviously they opened up the GI Bill, came about, and we've got so many here. I mean, the U of I obviously had some original, Colonel Tom Yancey, Professor Yancey, came back out of World War II, as you know, and went on to an incredible career here. Did you find that as you went through the stories, what proportion of the veterans came back and realized they need to go on with their life, get an education, or get into a trade, or what happened? Is that a common thread, or is that unique?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them grew up when they were in the service. It was a very maturing experience. When they came back, more people went to college than ever had gone before. The GI Bill was fantastic for that, and the University of Illinois built all kinds of housing for veterans. The university just grew enormously. WPGU, the radio station, stands for Parade Ground Unit. I mean, that was the parade ground. It was an amazing transformation of our country.
And then we have Memorial Stadium, which is dedicated to World War One. Obviously, I mean, mm-hmm. The Fighting Illini has nothing to do with the Native Americans, but has everything to do with the World War One troops.
Yeah, we really honored them. I can see the bitterness of, particularly of the people from the Vietnam War, that there's nothing like that in our area. I've never seen the wall. I've only seen the replicas, but it's certainly very moving.
I mean, the replica was just here, and for us it was a very moving day. I mean, you wrote about that when it was here in Mahomet last summer.
Yeah.
What kind of work is involved? I mean, you've been an investigative reporter for a long time, and obviously you just don't go into a story like this cold. What's involved in a background or learning or getting information to understand and communicate with the veteran and get these stories out?
Well, I went to graduate school in history, and my own father was in World War II, so particularly with the World War II, I'd already had a great interest. But I've looked at, there's a lot of official military sources, so when somebody says they were on a ship, I can look that up. I can verify all their dates and things like that. And it always amazes me how good their memory is in the first place.
Is there anything unique amongst World War II other than the same thing that everybody thought it was for real and they believed in it and it was definitely justified? Is there anything else totally unique? I mean, obviously Pearl Harbor, my dad was at, I just saw the map where he was on the ships in Pearl Harbor. And there's no way to even begin to understand that.
Yes, except for 9/11, there's never been an attack like that on the United States.
Yeah, and that's still all debatable on what happened on that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Korea. I mean, obviously, we got a lot of Korean War vets. I mean, my own cousin was Korean. I was just with him a few minutes ago. What was the difference between World War II and Korea as you talked to the veterans?
I think if you were at the front, you had a very different experience with the the United States entered a war that had already been going and made this decisive difference. But in Korea, if you were in combat, many people have stories about just being overrun by the Chinese, and they had no warning that the Chinese were going to enter the war. And a lot of stories about people freezing to death or being, you know, their bodies stuck to the truck they were on. So there's a lot of horror stories from Korea.
You know, I've read before, and I've seen articles too on how MacArthur was going to go in to Korea and do this dynamic entry with the Americans and thought they would run away, and they didn't run away. They ran toward them, and it turned into a massacre mainly.
Yeah.
And I think that was a wake-up call to America that this was not going to be an easy deal.
Ray, do you think that if we'd done things MacArthur's way, it would have been different?
No, I think it was probably a good move. It just didn't turn out. We didn't expect the Chinese to enter in such a force. And I think it stunned Americans and stunned even General MacArthur. And they had to pull back, regroup.
I agree. I think they couldn't guess that this country would just send people in these enormous numbers and apparently not really caring if they got gunned down. And so the wave after wave would be coming.
I mean, one thing that was unique, and I know for your research, we had the Korean War Museum, obviously was located in Tuscola for years, and then it ran up to Rantoul until the museum closed, and now it's over in Springfield associated with the Abraham Lincoln Museum. Having these resources available, the U of I and the Korean War Museum, must be absolutely wonderful for investigative reporter looking at stories like this, isn't it?
The archives here are fantastic. I really liked it when we had the museum here. It's sad that there was no financial way to keep it in our area.
Now, Channel 3 just had a special on that. I guess the archives from the Tuskegee Airmen have been moved now to the Urbana Library archives.
Yeah, I interviewed a couple of people from there. That's an amazing story, too. And so many of them were trained at Rantoul at Chinook Air Force Base.
Yeah, I was just on a program at a maximum security prison with a bunch of veterans, and we were there to speak to the veterans, and there was two or three Tuskegee Airmen on the stage with us, and so really honored. It's just amazing.
So, Ray, you got to actually speak with them?
I did, and I was on a program with them. I do a program called Life After Trauma, and what it is, is based on my experiences coming out of Vietnam and, you know, ground combat and such as that. Doug does a whole other thing on, and being part of the bomber force and those type of things. But living through so much trauma is when you're coming back and trying to re-go back or you're trying to re-enter society is a hard thing for a lot of people. And for me, I came back and I had been through so much combat up on the along the DMZ, what it was, that I came back and kind of numb from the neck up. And it took me years to ever recover from that to where I began to move forward. And now I use that as a launch, you know, for these people coming back. And the Marine Corps allows me to come in and speak to them about life after trauma. And another thing I wanted to ask you about, Paul, I'm working with a program called Moral Injury, where a lot of these veterans, including myself and Doug, have been violated. When you go into war, your conscience is violated, you know, just by living in America, really. And you come back wounded. And so that we're trying to help them with that.
How have you healed yourself?
I know you write a lot about it. And I'll be honest with you. I became a Christian years ago. But even through that, that helped me tremendously. But I had to get my head together, too. And I had to begin to formulate programs for my own self and be part of programs. And I didn't go to the VA for 32 years. I tried to live my own. I had business and different things and trying. But nobody knew the secret world that I had, that I was dying on the inside but living on the outside. And I think that is prevalent with a lot of veterans who come back, and it's just hard for them to get out of that place they're in. And the way I just describe it, Paul, is that we live in Disney World. This is where we're born compared to the rest of the world. When we go into a third world country or wherever it might be, and we're face-to-face with an enemy, and it could be in a thousand different ways, when we come back, we're different. They see in black and white life and death. And when you experience that and live in it for a while, you come back to Disney World and you just don't fit in any longer. Have you ever found anything like that?
Oh, I have heard that, but I was wondering with you if it was therapy that you've done all this work involving writing and helping other. I know Tales Press has also published some other veterans. Has that helped you?
Oh, it helps tremendously because every time I speak to them, I speak to me, and it helps to encourage my own self. And I had a friend one time who was working with suicide, and he and I were riding together to speak somewhere, and I told him, I said, I said, if you and I go down, we take a lot of people with us because we're standing up, you know, giving them what we have. And the man told me two or three days later, he called me, he said, Ray, you'll never know that I was sitting in that truck planning my own suicide when you told me that. And he said it stopped me from doing it. So you never know the power God gives us to reach other people through the things that we've been through.
Yes.
And that's one of the programs that I work with.
That's great work. Doug, you had some physical difficulties from your service in the war.
Yeah, more than one. I ended up with 80% disability. By their math, it's well over 100. But, first off with the B-52s blowing up and, you know, just after getting off of that, and then all the stuff we had from the research that I did and everything else, it's a real problem. I think with the military personnel, and this is one of the same things, it's hard to understand, and I don't know if you got a sense of this. As you talk to all these veterans from all the different wars and all the different segments of society, because you're touching everybody, every segment of society, what common thread runs through them? Are they in pain, or are they surviving, or are they moving, or are they looking, or are they... I don't know how to ask that question.
Well, you published a, in the Tales Press, you published a book by a World War II veteran who had had just a horrific experience of being imprisoned by the Germans and having trouble with the Russians, and the book mentions that there was still shrapnel coming out of his body years and years later, like 50 years later. But he seems to have, this is talking about Charlie Dukes here, right? It's my impression that he has come to closure with it. Is that your impression too, Ray?
Well, yes, I think it does come with time. A lot of guys will have reunions if at all possible. And what a reunion does is answer some of the questions you may have that you didn't have answers for. And so we get together, and what I've told them before is we need to find a lot more good memories to override the bad ones. And I think as a process of moving forward, moving on, I really don't believe it has to do with a lot of drugs and things and pharmaceuticals. I believe that the better you began to get your head straight and can think clearly, the better the information coming to you will help you propel you into your future. One of the things I tell them, Paul, is that you cannot allow your past to control your future, mm-hmm. and they're able to move on.
And you've had a lot of experience with the Marine Corps League, and you've probably helped yourself and helped others through that, I'm imagining.
Well, I've never really joined a lot of outside groups like that, because a lot of them like to sit around and talk about experiences, and it always unnerves me. It makes my adrenaline pump, and I go into a panic mode and things. And so I've always avoided those type of things, but I do like to find information. I've studied on it. I'm allowed to go into the Marine Corps bases and different bases, really, and speak to groups of military coming back through a lot of life lessons and information I found along the way. And, you know, what I'm telling them is that regardless of your past, you can't let it, you know, stop you from moving forward. You have to choose your friends better, because you'll always end up like the people you're hanging around. And I tell them, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. That was Buzz Aldrin's thing. But there's a lot of positive things you can teach these men that will begin to moving forward and get them past those memories. Because the memories, what I liken it to is a man sitting on the beaches like a veteran, like World War II or Korea or Vietnam, and he's in life, he's sitting on the beach waiting for his ships to come in, not knowing the ships don't come to shore. You have to get your feet wet, and you have to move out. And as Doug did, and I didn't do, he came back and entered right back into college and began to move forward, and I didn't. I failed to do that. I ended up working two and three jobs trying to have a family, and no one. And I was drinking a lot, and what it was, I was trying to squelch the memories and the emotions and the nightmares. I had nightmares almost every night. And I just didn't, back in those days, the VA really wasn't there like it is today. And so it was partly my fault. I didn't seek them. But I think a lot of these people, they more or less adapt, improvise, and overcome rather than moving forward. And we're trying to reach them today and get them the information early so they can begin to make better choices.
That's very interesting. Doug, what was your healing experience like?
Well, it still hasn't happened. I mean, you've written stories, and you know about our team. I mean, so many of our team were abandoned. I mean, John Sitt and Jim Runge both got abandoned by the Danville VA, and they died abandoned, and just Rollo and I left alive on our team, and then our civilian leaders have gone on to the Angels now. I think the strange stuff about all the lessons we learned, all the training operations that we put together, seem to be ignored still today. And that goes back in. We're ignoring the lessons that we learned and trying to rewrite them, and then it all falls apart again. So when we hear the new veteran's coming back, and we've had that locally with a veteran, we've got a veteran right here. He didn't know what he was exposed to. They didn't tell him until he came back and he started having medical problems. Then all of a sudden, okay, why is this happening to me? I thought I came back healthy.
Mm-hmm. And how long did that feel, Chris?
Did you understand that at first, or has it changed?
I'll be honest with you. It was hard at first to understand, be ignored. Every time I go to the VA, I try to explain what's going on with me. Why am I having rashes? Why is she this? Why is this? And they won't explain what's wrong with me? And they just explain to me, hey, this is just like a little athletic rash or something, or actually some kind of little thing, just that. And I keep on looking at them. It's like, this is not that. It can't be. And they gave me like some kind of cream in order to, and it goes away a little bit, and boom, I come back again. It's even worse. And I explain to them, hey, this, something's not right. And they gave me another cream, and I feel like I was a guinea pig. I'm being honest with you. And that's what I felt like the VA just keep on giving me medication, instead of trying to actually go straight to the point, you know. And my thinking came to a point, yes, the VA is not, you know, come to conclusion to help you, to all help, but I need help myself. I got to think positive, because I used to think negative all the time. I'm being honest with you. I used to drink a lot. I used to self-medicate myself all the time. I used to look at the news all the time. I used to look at Facebook all the time. I used to, you know, argue with my, you know, everybody. I used to have anger issues all the time, which goes with post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm being honest with you. And it came to a point, nothing's enough. I need to change my life somehow, my thinking patterns. And, yeah, I'll be honest with you, it took me time. It took a lot of time. And, of course, Heavenly Father, our Lord, it helped me go in church. And other things, too, of course, good set of friends and everything else, instead of drinking buddies and everything else. And again, you got to get that positive attitude. You know, you got to look, and you got to get up. I learned you can't be laying around in the house and moping around. You got to find a hobby or something. You got to, you know, do something for fun. That's what I found out, something positive in your life. You got to do something, because if you sit around doing nothing, then that's what's going to happen. You're going to be sitting around almost like wasting your life away. And I'd be honest with you, I fell myself into depression, severe depression. And once I fell in severe depression, things fell down. And I almost suicided twice in my life, I'm being honest with you. And I shouldn't, yes, when I hit the rock bottom, my house and everything, you know, bills wasn't paid and everything, I lost my ex-wife and everything. Life, generally, I thought life is over. But to be honest with you, there's no way to get back. There's no way to go but get back up, and that's what happened. I got back up, and I'm continually crawling back up. I'm being honest with you, and I'm doing my best. And you can't do it by yourself. I'm being honest with you. You got to have a battle buddy, which is people that totally understand, which is our vets. But you got to have, we got to have each other, helping each other. I'm being honest with you, because we cannot do it ourselves. And we got to watch each other backs like we did overseas. I'm being honest, because it's hard. I felt like we're fighting another war, and we are. We are kind of fighting like another war. And it's hard, but you got to put an effort to it. I'm being honest with you. And you got to put a positive attitude and just have a bow buddy next to you, and we fight for each other back and forth and watch each other's backs.
That works good. Paul, you just recently did a story on this last Monday's paper about a woman who was an Air Force veteran that's absolutely helping other veterans or take them into their house. I mean, that's
incredible.
Yeah, these
men would otherwise be homeless. Yeah.
Pardon?
These men would otherwise be homeless, yeah.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. And some of the stories, can you tell us some of the stories you've encountered and everything? It's the breadth and the depth is mind-boggling. I mean, the experiences of veterans in our region here across the nation is, even people that were right there at the same time have a totally different experience. Tell us about some of these, please.
I was just going to say that both of you seem to have really found some help, both in your Christian faith and from other people who are veterans. But it's striking that there's such a decline in groups like the American Legion and the VFW that younger people don't seem to be getting the same benefits from going to those. The people I've talked to, it's just, like you say, an extremely wide variety of experiences. And some people have just moved past it. What's interesting to me is how people experience horror. And we had a rabbi here, Rabbi Newman, who had been in the Holocaust and lost his family in prison concentration camps, yet he had a great sense. He's died recently. He had a great sense of humor, and he somehow got beyond that. And other people don't seem to be able to adjust to PTSD and things like that. So I wonder if that's also an experience that you two have found. Sounds like it is.
Yeah, you've got to get involved in everything. And I know in our community here in Champaign-Urbana and Ray's out there, the same thing, the opportunities to get involved in everything is, I mean, we've got both Parkland College, which is incredible, and the University of Illinois right here. We got Eastern and, Northwestern and, NIU, all these other ones are so close to us, ISU. So this opportunity for education for the veteran, I think, is a key. As you talk to all these veterans that you've been interviewing for these 3 years, what proportion or portion went on to getting an education and go on with their professional life, or what proportion did just kind of squander away?
Most of them have gone on to be successful and have some of them are professors, some doctors. But I wonder if the pool of people I'm interviewing is not that representative. I mean, if I'm talking to you, it means you've survived. And you probably prospered, and there must be many people that I haven't talked to who haven't done as well.
I think sometimes, and this is just my opinion too, Paula, I think the amount of trauma and the type of trauma that you're exposed to, I know a lot of the combat veterans in World War II were the last ones to come home, many of them. And they came on ships, and that was good because they were able to process a lot of things. They were able to talk to each other, laugh about the situations, get it out of them, those type of things. But when they came home, the parades were over, and all those things were over. And I think a lot of these veterans came back with a little bit of resentment. But I'm teaching a class tomorrow at Camp Lejeune to a group of combat veterans coming back from Afghanistan, and I'm teaching them. Last week, I taught them on life after trauma, a pathway to purpose. And this week, I'm teaching them a class on moral injury, which is one of the hardest classes I think everybody avoids it, actually. But they've asked me to do it. One thing I tell them is out of Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And it says, forces beyond your control can take away everything you possess except one thing, your freedom to choose how you will respond to your situation. And I think that's got a great deal with everything, is that you get to the point that you're tired, sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you're not going to get any better. So you've got to more or less draw the line between yesterday and today, and you take one step forward, and I get them to do that exact thing. And today is the first day of the rest of your life. Now, what do you want to do with it? And they're able to make some decisions. You know, I know it seems very simple, but to a person that's hurting, has been very effective, and it's called a restart program of where your past is a past and you can't do anything about it, but remember it. But you can't spend too much time looking in a rearview mirror looking at the past because it will stop your future. And so you get them began to focus on the future and not on their past. And it's been very positive. It's been a lot of great success in it. And I don't know if veterans are different today. I don't know what it is, but we're finding a lot of suicide with them. They're running out of options. They're putting on a lot of medications to try to get rid of some of their emotional problems. But I think it's working in a negative effect. And so we're seeing a lot of bad things today that we might not have seen, or maybe it wasn't exposed. I don't know. Maybe it was always there.
I think
or maybe
it's
there was a balance to people feeling
more.
Maybe there was a balance to people coming back from World War II and feeling like what they had done was absolutely morally right. You just used the phrase, it sounded like it was moral injury.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And what
Could
it is
that?
Basically is a violation. I wrote a book called The Never Ending War, and it's my combat memoir. But I learned a lot about me when I wrote that book because a lot of things were coming out. I was being honest about things. I was taking you actually into the combat so you could experience the fear and all these things taking place. But one of the things I said in my book was when we went to war, I was 19. I'd been in the Marine Corps for about a year and a half or 2 years. But I went into to Vietnam, and it was the heaviest fault area of Vietnam that was located the first 15 miles along the demilitarized zone, which was just open jungle, really. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North was one of our second lieutenants back then, so he's experienced the same things. But one of the things I said, Paul, was that we had to take everything that we learned in home and Sunday school and church and put it on a shelf and go to war. And when you do such as that, you wound your conscience. The violations of saying, you know, those five moral laws of the Ten Commandments actually say don't lie, don't steal, don't kill, don't commit adultery, and don't be covetous or idolatrous. When you get to that one about thou shalt not kill, and I grew up in America, and so America always had these Christian values, television, everywhere you look in, churches. And you may not have realized it, but you were listening. And when you go to war, you violate your conscience. And so you come home basically wounded on the inside, your morals. The conscience is made from the morals. And that's what I focus on many times. And that's the part about moral injury. And like I say, I learned a lot in my book by writing the book and self-analyzing myself and then going to certain psychiatrists and doctors. And now the VA is beginning to move forward on the moral injury programs because they're finding out as part of the veteran that was violated. And look, this works for anybody who's ever been actually traumatized. I work with women, with children who have been violated when they were molested or they were raped or they were beat up. And so it has a commonality among it, but you're able to get into the dark places of their heart and minister to it, and people are finding truth, and they're finding light, and they're finding happiness. Pretty amazing.
You know what I found out? I had to forgive myself in order to continue to move on. I'm not sure. It was hard. It was the hardest part, but I had to forgive myself to continue on, and it hurt.
How did you manage to forgive yourself?
I just took one day at a time. I'm being honest with you. One day at a time. I didn't look at the past, of course. Never looked at the past. And I didn't ever look at the future. I just take one day at a time. And of course, I had Heavenly Father to help us to forgive. And I just took one day at a time to look and forgive everything I did, all the bad things I did, all the bad things, and I took one individual and either writing it out or just thinking in your head, either way, Because you got to think about it. And once you think about it, you got to just pass it off down to the empty. Because you got to, because of course you got to think about it in order to, because to be honest with you, I'm the type of person, I tend to see let things go and forget about things. And don't let things
Paul, can I speak just a moment on what you're talking about right here? I want to tell you one thing, and then I want to tell you what I do today. I dealt with the same exact thing what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And for 32 years, I dealt with that. But a couple years later, I had gone to the VA, and they put me in a post-traumatic stress hospital for, I don't know what it is, 5 weeks or something. And during that program, I was talking to certain therapists and all, and I had gotten opened up. And I told this girl, I said, I used to ride my Harley, and I would spit in the wind to spit in my own face because I hated me. Now, I was a Christian, and I was trying to live for the Lord and trying to love people, but I hated me. And she asked me a question one day. She said, do you have any friends up here? And there was about 18 of us in that program. And I said, well, yeah, I think so. She said, do you think they like you? And I said, yeah, well, I guess. I don't know. She said, they probably do. She said, you know what? Maybe you are a good guy and not a bad guy. And I came out of that meeting, I was walking down the hallway, and I thought to myself, you know, before Vietnam, my dad was a good Christian man. He taught me how to be a good man. And I had a good teacher. And so I began to be a good person, a good man. I never got into a lot of trouble or anything in the school and all. But then I went to Vietnam. In Vietnam, I did a lot of bad things to people because I was in a lot of combat and because I was... You develop a mental hardness in combat, and I said it became so bad that I became as complacent as a corner butcher working on a piece of beef, and I was just one of many. And when you're 19 years old and you're doing such as that. But I said when I came home, I began to try to treat people decent again and good again. But I came to the realization the only time I was really a rotten, dirty human being was Vietnam, and I realized that was a situation we were thrown into that was really an abnormal situation, and I was having normal responses because of, you know, you want to live. And so I forgave myself in that hallway because I realized it was not me. It was not really the person I am and I want to be.
Yeah.
And what I did, I walked away from it.
Both of you were in situations that required you to do things you wouldn't ordinarily do.
That's correct.
Right.
I think everybody that served in the military was at one time or another, if you were on the front line in combat, if you were flying aircraft, or you were in maintenance, or you're medical.
That's true.
For the hardest medical, and Paul, you've interviewed some of our team before, the hardest for the medical is a realization that we couldn't save them. They died in our arms. Despite the best efforts we made, they died. And then you come back and deal with, okay, why did they die? And what could have I done different to allow them to live, with the realization that God's the only one that makes that decision. We don't. And I think that's where the healing comes in, when you make that realization and you accept what happened, that we can't change it, we can't alter it. The only thing we can do is, like the story you wrote about this last week, the woman made the conscious decision to take homeless vets into her home. Wow. Talk about making a difference. That's a conscious choice requiring all kinds of sacrifices.
She's an amazing woman. Ray, did you also lose friends in Vietnam?
I'm sorry. Did I lose friends? I was in one battle, Paul, where 48 of us, Marines and corpsmen, and we took 42 casualties. I was one of six who walked out of that. And I was right in the fighting. I lost a lot of my friends that day. But there was a year in this particular area, estimates say that you could, in a 365-day period, you could be in combat over 300 times, or contact with the enemy over 300 days. And so I think it was different between World War II. The VA says this, and I'm not sure if it's true or not, but they say that in 4 years of World War II, the average combat veteran saw like 45 days of combat. In Vietnam, because we were stuck there, and maybe Korea the same way, a lot of the combat veterans saw a lot of combat in that one-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has an altering effect on how much trauma you've actually been or witnessed or been part of. And that you come back and you have all these complications, not only emotional, but you also have physical, like Doug talked about, because you were there and you never left.
Chris, you spent 2 years in combat, current time, OF. I mean, was it 2 years of solid combat, or was there a peacetime in this period, or was it in battle all the time?
My first tour was 2003 to 2005, total year and a half of combat, solid. And my second tour, I'm being honest with you, was 2009 to 2010. So if you look at it, typically about 2.5 years of solid combat of OIF total in country.
Ray, I'm interested that you wrote so much about World War II and the Iwo Jima in particular. Was it hard for you to come to grips with Vietnam, so you felt like you had to first approach it from a different war?
You're talking to me, right?
Yes.
No, I mean, we looked up to the World War II veterans and the Korean veterans. They were our heroes. One of the problems was, Paul, when we came home, they weren't our heroes any longer. They criticized us. I've had them tell me, you were not in World War II, man. You don't know nothing. I said, where I was, we were. We lost a lot of people. We lost a lot of men throughout that time. And it's because, Paul, we lived in the jungle 85% of the times. And Oliver North can tell you this, too, because he was one of us. But we lived among the enemy, and you never got a break. And everything in a jungle, when it's 115, 118 degrees, and it's 100% humidity, and everything you can imagine, everything is your enemy out there, including the men trying to find you and kill you. And my book has a lot of combat in it, but it's only a part and parcel for actually what happened. But it gives you an idea. You can actually see me begin to deteriorate and become another person in combat because, you know, you can't be sympathetic to your enemy because this was a bunch of youngins, and young people. They were 18 years old, 19 years old, 20 years old. I think 19 was the average age. And when you're thrown in a situation that it's survival and either you go through his pockets or he goes through your pockets, and you deliberately kill people. And that's what it is. And there were big battles. There would be sometimes a group of 500 North Vietnamese, an entire battalion hitting our little company out there in the middle of a jungle. And you had to fight for your survival and your life and your buddies. And it changed us tremendously. But it's actually like a standard for a lot of veterans, because a lot of veterans tell me, oh, well, I was never in that much stuff. I never got into that. But everybody was in something, and it's become a standard. The VA uses my book in several hospitals for post-traumatic stress, and it's really been an amazing journey, telling the story and then, you know, the aftermath. And it's very VA-friendly. They're vetting it as a textbook for post-traumatic stress disorder. And so it's been pretty amazing.
Well, it's interesting you say that. A lot of people, a common thread in the Vietnam veterans is the war was different because you actually had your enemy among you. And several people have said that the same person who cut your hair during the day wanted to cut your throat coming back that night in black pajamas. And that wasn't really the experience of World War II in Korea, was it?
Probably not. I think the other unique thing, and for me it was so different because I was in the Air Force flying a B-52 as a hard hat. We'd go out and go under the horror of a bombing mission, and I'd come back and I'd get a hot shower and a bath, and I'd get a meal and sit down and go back to a warm bed with real sheets and real blankets. And then 12 hours later, we're flying back into a mission up North Vietnam and back and forth, and it was like we're in and out, we're in and out and in and out. And then with Desert Storm, as you know, we got tasked to, you know, teach all the worst of the worst and get them prepared and then clean up the worst of the worst after it happened. And to this day, they're still denying that that even happened. I mean, that thing for all of us and so many, when you know what you were involved in and then there's denials of what happened, that really tears at the heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it does seem like there's a manufacturer of lies to protect the reputation of the military service sometimes.
Paul, do you find a kind of an overriding an overtone, more or less, of all these veterans about any religious connections after combat or after their traumas, or do you find the opposite of that?
No, I find that that's exactly true, and you know Charlie Dukes very well. You know, he has his good morning to everybody. He had a revelation that life was an incredible gift after being in war, so while he was in war. So you know that. I think I've heard that from nearly everybody.
I think war can make you a better human being. I really do. I think once you've survived, once you've sacrificed, once you've served with other men and women who are serving, who are sacrificing, I believe if you make it through it, you'll be a better person, or at least you have the ability to do it. Some people choose not to, and they get in trouble. And they say 1 out of 10 veterans are in prison, or 1 out of 10 prisoners are veterans. I should have said that. And now I'm going into different prison units and correction facilities trying to reach them. And so, you know, they get into trouble. They get on VA medication sometimes. They run out of medication. They go to the street to buy some, and then they go to jail. So there's not everybody in there is a criminal. I believe some of them were survivors that got in trouble.
Why do you think some people came out stronger emotionally and in their faith, and other people came out crippled by some of the same experiences?
I know, but don't you think they all have the possibility if we could get to them? I have people telling me all the time, someone committed suicide or they did this, and my thought is, oh, I wish I could have got to them. I wish I could have told them something that I've learned along the way that might have helped them to grow old. And one of the reasons I didn't commit suicide, and I've thought about it 1,000 times, on my motorcycle, my cars, my truck, whatever, was the fact is I love my children. And I went through a divorce, too, and I married a wonderful woman with 5 daughters, and that was terrible. She'd been a good woman and 5 daughters. Vietnam, I always said Vietnam trained me for raising 5 daughters. But anyway, I wouldn't want to kill myself for them, because I didn't want to put the burden on them of ever wondering what could they have done or should they have done. And so I've never done that.
That sounds like an extra level of stress for both of you.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
When you talk to the veteran, obviously, you know, always hear thank a veteran, that's all over Memorial Day, Veterans Day, anything like that. As you talk to the veterans, what kind of sense do you get as what the veterans' expectations are from society? Is there any threat, or is it completely different all the way through?
I think people are different, but a lot of people don't feel like anything is owed to them for their service. Over and over, people say, well, I didn't give the ultimate sacrifice, or I know somebody who went through much more than me. I think there's, as you say, there's a maturity that comes out of having served.
What I try to get them to understand, like tomorrow, for instance, Paul, is that if you've got fallen brothers, you cannot honor your fallen brothers in any better way than making a good life for yourself.
Oh.
And I said, they might be watching too, so you better do it.
That's so true. But you guys have both striven to do that, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Well, what have you learned from all these conversations that you've had with these veterans? Can you put it in a few words, or how would you sum it?
Boy, that's tough. That's a tough question. I really do think the experience of people in different wars is amazingly different, and the World War II people feel pretty good about what they've done, and some of the younger veterans, like in your experience, you both had to go through certain things. Some of the younger veterans still have not come to grips with what they had to experience.
Paul, I mean, you've been doing this as an incredible series. Is there any plan through a book? I mean, you've got the makings of one incredible book, having done this for 3 years and so many discussions.
I would love to do a book. We published a book version of our World War II oral history, and also those, unlike what I've been doing, that was all on tape, and we donated the oral history tapes to whatever the Lake of the Woods Museum is called nowadays. So that can all be accessed. I'd like to see it digitized, too.
Well, Paul, thank you very much. Paul Woods, Champaign News Gazette, incredible journalist. Thank you for telling the story of the veterans, Paul. God bless you. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Chris. God bless America, and let's take care of veterans. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again, Paul.
Thanks, both of you, for your service.